The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas, for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hi, a quick note about ads from us, your hosts. We are picky about our advertisers and all of our partners or brands or products that we either use ourselves or that we think our audience would benefit from knowing about. Working with advertisers is what allows us to make this show, and they keep working with us because you, our listeners, use the unique links and codes they provide. It's one of the most meaningful ways to support what we do. So thanks for that. We're really, really grateful. If you're ever looking for a specific code, head to athingortwohq.com/sponsors and you'll find them all. Okay, here's the show.
Welcome to A Thing or Two, a deep dive into stuff we think more people should know about. I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. To share your thoughts on this episode or anything really, leave us a voicemail at 833-632-5463 or DM us on Instagram at athingortwohq.
And join our Geneva. I looked the other day, there's like 1,000 of you in there.
Yeah, and people have been chatty this week.
Also, I apologize that it is hard to find. We've had several DMs about this. The easiest way to get to it is go into our Instagram bio and there's a link tree and scroll down. You'll find a link to our Geneva.
Yes, there's the discovery on Geneva. That is my only complaint about Geneva.
Yeah,
my only piece of feedback.
Before we get into the meat of today's show, a lightning round of micro updates and corrections. We caused some confusion around the Stanley Cup backpacks, and it's warranted confusion. It didn't occur to me how we needed to phrase it, but
I think the thing is, there's already confusion when you use the term Stanley Cup because people who have watched 3 hockey games in their life are like, I know what you're talking about.
Yes.
So I blame it on Stanley Cup for just creating broad confusion in general.
Well, and we reported on a recent episode that people are buying backpacks for their Stanley Cups, and people interpreted that as a backpack in which to place your Stanley Cup, which is the most obvious interpretation of that statement.
They used context clues and they were like, I understand the logic. I see what's happening. We're buying backpacks specifically suited for this cup.
And that is true. It is a backpack specifically suited for this cup, but it is a backpack for your cup to wear is the issue. And
as if you were buying sneakers for the Stanley Cup to wear also so that it can walk around town.
It's the funniest visual because it makes the Stanley Cup look like a small child.
Yes.
Just going to back to school with their giant backpack.
Yeah.
And I think it's judging by the comments on our Instagram post about this, I think this is going to be the thing that like gets a lot of people to get rid of their Stanley Cup.
Well, here, I think that might be true, but I just want to say, friends, if you have gone at the Stanley Cup thing, you need to commit to the fact that you bought a reusable cup and you need to use it.
That's true.
Where you need to reuse this thing forever. We can't just keep buying whatever trendy reusable cup there is over and over again.
The trend pieces about all the kids who are like have like one to match each outfit.
Of course, Claire. And if you have 40 reusable cups, you're really defeating the purpose of the reusable cup.
Well, also, we didn't use disposable cups in when we were in elementary school. We just went to the fucking water fountain.
The ultimate. The actual ultimate reusable cup.
The most sustainable option is the water fountain.
Yep. Let's just get back to that.
It is not the most hygienic option, but it is the most sustainable.
Especially not in grade school.
Okay. Quick update. You'll recall us talking about bonbon candy.
It's been all over the place recently.
Well, it went viral on TikTok with good reason because
it's
so
incredible.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So it went viral on TikTok because it's cute and cute things do well on TikTok. And so now it's having a nightlife moment because it's open till midnight. So
nightlife, it bonbon after dark.
Bonbon after dark. So people are lining up and, you know, it's on the Lower East Side. There's one in Williamsburg. So it's around a lot of other nightlife attractions. So
this is smart. You know why? Because you also can't get a fucking piece of pizza after like 10 p.m. anymore.
It's
so
true.
Now you can get candy. Now we're just doing candy.
So it's a tiny shop, especially the one on the Lower East Side where this seems to really be happening. So there's this long line out the door with velvet ropes and a bouncer. The New York Post writes, this past Saturday, a gaggle of 20-somethings dressed in knee-high boots and black leather miniskirts queued up outside the pink storefront, eager to get in. A dedicated candy bouncer named Sage managed the line as Britney Spears' Toxic blared from inside. The shop's Swedish co-founder, Robert Persson, 40, admitted that some customers are clearly inebriated as they scoop their candy, which is priced at $18 per pound. The boozy people spend more money, no shame. Then you have the stoners. They can spend $150, so you know they're smoking something. They fill up the bag. They don't stop. Or they'll take forever in the store just staring. Which actually, as I'm reading this, reminds me of a delightful meme I just saw recently that was a picture of the new Kacey Musgraves album cover where she's
deeper
just,
well.
Yeah. She's holding like a flower and just staring kind of blankly into the camera. Yeah. And somebody tweeted and wrote, "What my bodega owner sees after I walk in high and spend 45 minutes picking out a single piece of candy." That's good. Okay, moving on to other cute things that are having a TikTok moment. Apparently white strawberries, which now this is what, our third time talking about them, or only our second?
Yeah, pine berries, white strawberries.
Yeah.
They have a third name.
Took off last year because of TikTok. Again, unsurprising. I just needed to let you know because I felt that we were not completist when we described all the different ways that these were being packaged as a fruit trend, is that the most recent one that I discovered, like Christopher Columbus.
Like, I think you discovered it exactly like Christopher Columbus.
Berry de Blanc, which we should have seen coming, that they were going to make it French. But the best part is that Berry de Blanc is produced by Aston Farms in Florida, which, as we all know, is the most French of the United States.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. American Riviera Orchard.
It's very American Riviera Orchard, Berry de Blanc. It's like Berry de Blanc, and then underneath it says pine berries. So we're going with pine berries as the official name.
Official title. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then I was researching this, and it turned out every website that has an SEO specialist on staff wrote about pine berries in 2023 because of the TikTok trend. And MarthaStewart.com wrote and said, gave us the scoop on this. So it's a hybrid between Japanese white strawberries and regular Florida strawberries. They got their name thanks to their subtle pineapple aftertaste.
Again, so subtle you wouldn't taste it.
Says Vance Whitaker, PhD, professor of horticulture at the University of Florida. Whitaker, who developed the Florida Pearl, which is the pine berry's branded name in the United States, says the fruit is sold under...
I'm sorry. Florida Pearl is another working title?
That's the registered trademark. The pine berry is like the name of the fruit.
Okay. To interject for a moment, I think they were smart to realize that Florida Pearl was not the one to make public
facing.
Yeah,
no, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's sold under multiple labels like Pinkaboo at Wish Farms, Berry de Blanc at it. But yeah, I guess Pinkaboo is what we got because we got the Wish Farms fairy, right?
Yeah. She was Pinkaboo?
But I think maybe they rebranded in 2024.
They're trying a lot of stuff. They are tossed at the wall over there.
Meanwhile, in Europe, the Pearl name is used through Marks and Spencer. It's worth note. This I actually thought was really interesting. It's worth noting that white strawberries aren't necessarily new. They were grown by indigenous people in Chile, where they're sometimes found in the wild as far back as 1,000 years ago, according to the University of Missouri.
How'd they get to Japan, I wonder? Yeah, that's our next update.
Because Japanese people love cute stuff and like fancy luxury premium fruit.
Yeah, totally.
Like
think
about what fruit looks like in a Japanese grocery store.
Yeah,
of course they were going to go for this.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you so much to Nuuly for sponsoring today's episode. For my birthday, Thomas took me out to like a sort of like jazzy, fancy, you know, oystery dinner. And I was browsing Nuuly and was like, oh, I should borrow a dress, like a dress that I 1,000% do not need to own, but that would be fun to wear for a night. And so I got this like Simon Miller dress with fringy whatever and like bodycon top and open in the back and like a whole situation that was so fun to put on for a birthday dinner. And so not something I need hanging out in the side of my closet. Like, what a perfect answer for this question.
That feels very special and exciting and fun.
Yeah, it was just fun. It was just fun, you know?
Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service that is fun. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles each month. You choose whatever you want to rent for whatever you have going on, which may just be a birthday dinner with oysters. It's totally up to you. You can access thousands of styles from more than 400 brands, everything from birthday party dresses to premium denim and one-of-a-kind vintage pieces. They have Free People. They have Farm Rio. They have Anthropologie. They have 8 Goldie. And Lisa Says Ga. They have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite maternity, fast free shipping and returns, and professional cleaning in Nuuly's state-of-the-art laundering facility. So there is no laundry for you to worry about. Just the option to buy what you love,
which is sometimes up to 75% off if you don't want to have to send it back. Renting from Nuuly means getting to wear more while spending less. Curb that must buy something new feeling you get when there are events on the calendar while still feeling confident and excited about your wardrobe. Nuuly gives you everything you need to get inspired, get creative, and explore your style without making commitments. You can free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. And it's flexible. There are no fees, no late fees, no damage fees, no fees to pause or cancel. So no big deal if you lose a button, spill something, or just need to take a break. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any six styles, but right now you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code ATHINGOR220. Just go to NUULY.com. That's Nuuly with two U's and enter the code ATHINGOR220 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Nuuly with two U's with code ATHINGOR220. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
Welcome to Barely Filtered, hosted by us. I'm Aurora Culpo, star of the HBO Max show, The Culpo Sisters. Don't tell my sisters I said so. I'm a recently divorced mom of two living in Los Angeles with my ex-husband. I'm part granola mom, part glamorous jet setter.
I'm Kristen Gaffney, also a mom, a startup nerd who modeled for Sports Illustrated Swimsuit and the founder and CEO of Super Chew. I always like to microdose my coffee before I hit up carpool.
Welcome to Barely Filtered,
our safe space.
Here, we discuss health and wellness, becoming a grown-ass woman, and what's going on in this crazy world. And while we don't agree on everything, we do agree on this.
We want you to live your best f***ing life.
Okay, that concludes our segment of micro updates, corrections, apologies, contrition.
Now we are moving into the darker part
of the episode. Heavier.
Thank you. I mentioned on a recent episode that my dad died recently. It wasn't sudden, but it was unexpected. Mm-hmm. Does that feel fair?
That's exactly right. I had to answer. When I would tell anybody who didn't know, that was the first question. And I had the exact same response where it was like, not no and not yes.
I'm trying to figure out how to share about this on this podcast in a way that feels right to me. And so thank you all for bearing with me in trying to figure that out. I think the other context that is sort of helpful to share maybe at the top that to like frame this is that my mom is in a place where she can't help in sort of like processing all of the things related to this emotionally or logistically, which means that that is on my brothers to also sort of manage. And me.
But I like framing it as being like, I don't do it. It's just my brothers. They have to deal with it because you have two brothers.
That's right.
You are the oldest. You are the true eldest daughter.
Yes. And so I wanted to talk about a few things. I wanted to talk about the things people have done that have helped me over the last couple of months. I wanted to talk about grief and the ring theory of grief, which has come up before. I wanted to talk about Atul Gawande's book, Being Mortal, that I have read twice, and thank God for both readings is my big takeaway. And I wanted to talk a little bit about like when people have been asking me, what can I do to help or what should I do? So to talk about the ways people have supported me that have been most meaningful or just like that have, I think part of what's been really hard is navigating the relationship management right now and just feeling like I'm so grateful for any and all support that I'm getting, but also inherently there's some amount of like burden that comes with people reaching out in specific ways. Mm-hmm. And I've really like tried to free myself from the like pressure to like respond in a timely manner or to respond when I'm like not in the like mental place where I feel like I can. But there are just like in general, you know, people have expectations and people are like, I haven't heard from you. I like want to like check in and make sure you're okay. And it's like, I understand the instinct, but then also I'm like, I haven't responded because I like don't have the bandwidth, whether that's like emotional or like time in the day.
Yeah. There's also, to add some context to this, you are an incredibly thorough person who is more responsive to text and email than anybody I know. So it's also out of character for you to not respond and makes it, I think, all the more like a decision that you made yeah. for yourself to yeah. not do it because yeah. you yeah. are incredibly deliberate and complete when it comes to to communication.
I think that is true and often to a fault. And so I think I get a little like frustrated with my like frustrated with like the various pressures I feel like internal and external mm-hmm. with how to manage some of that stuff. The things that like, so, okay. So some things that have been helpful, people who are sending texts that are ostensibly text to check in, but they are sending me something that they think will bring me joy or delight. Mm-hmm. And it's like bunnies on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And it is like a podcast episode that they mm-hmm. think I might be into, or just like a funny picture of their child, or like any of those things are just like so nice because it allows me to feel like I'm being thought of. Mm-hmm. But I don't have to be expected to like engage or mm-hmm. like answer questions.
Well, and you're also allowed to have moments of happiness even amidst this moment of grief.
Yes. Yes. People who have been sharing really specific memories of my dad have been just like meaningful, especially from like high school friends and things mm-hmm. that had like those experiences and those like moments. And I think that has just gone a long way in making me feel like, in like bringing me back to those places, you know, because I think it is very hard right now to feel like stuck in the like right now of it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Well, and like the thing about losing a parent is you've known them your entire life, and to try to wrap your head around the scope of the person that you've lost
yeah.
is hard.
Yeah.
And so to have the help by way of like, remember when 20 years ago.
Yes.
30 years ago.
And yes.
also people change and you're like mourning different versions of the person that you lost and to like honor all of those versions of that person.
That's right. That's right. You and Scandal Club left me a snack basket, mm-hmm. which I think was just like, I think I didn't realize that like, God, just the like grocery shopping of it all mm-hmm. and like having those things around mm-hmm. actually felt harder than dealing mm-hmm. with the like, making dinner and having, you know, having meals,
yeah.
But just the like logistics of like mm-hmm. getting stuff around the house mm-hmm. in that way. And then another sort of like piece of this, like there were friends and family members who did something for the kids, mm-hmm. for my brother's kids. Mm-hmm. And in the aftermath of my dad dying, I really wanted to be able to like be more present for mm-hmm. my niece and nephew, but it felt like impossible
yeah.
for me. And so it felt very special that people were stepping up to like connect with them specifically mm-hmm. and to send them Jenny's ice cream or to send mm-hmm. them like mm-hmm. crumble cookies or like whatever was mm-hmm. going to be the thing. And I also feel like games or movies or like any of that stuff would have been like, yeah, also like a wonderful thing. On contained projects and being the point person for other friends was something like were two things that you both did that mm-hmm. I was just so extremely grateful for. You know, I would tell you about things that were on my plate and everybody always says in these situations, like, let me know what I can do to help. Mm-hmm. And it gets really hard to know how to ask for those things sometimes and to even see what those things are that could be like sort of mm-hmm. passed off. And during one of those conversations, you were like, oh, that's something I could do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can I bite this thing off mm-hmm. that is like its own project that, mm-hmm. you know, doesn't require having anybody's social security number, uh-huh. doesn't require a death certificate. Uh-huh. Can I help? And, you know, those like moments like are just so meaningful and helpful. And I think, I have been leaning really hard on Thomas to like pick up some of those mm-hmm. pieces too. I think it has been really helpful in demonstrating to me and also I think to others like that this is a partnership
mm-hmm.
and that like, of course he can manage certain aspects of this that are like, that feel very sticky and tricky and feel mm-hmm. very family because he is my family.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that has like, the like those demonstrations of partnership from him and from you have been really really meaningful. And, you know, I think I was saying that you being a point person, mm-hmm. there were friends that you were communicating mm-hmm. with a lot and sharing information that just I didn't have the capacity to mm-hmm. share, who also were really respecting that.
Well,
piece.
They knew to reach out to me.
Yeah.
They didn't even try to go through you, which was a sign of awareness. Which, and certainly, as you said, everybody's desperate to help. I was like more than happy to fill this role and also for myself to like have somebody to talk to about it who wasn't you and to process it with. But the language that one of our friends used was she texted and was just said, can I bully you into violating Erica's privacy? And I was like, yes, absolutely. This is the right way to do it. I was like happy to be also like nagged about it again, because like I, you know, I'm also, I'm happy to have somebody to talk to about this with, you know, like, and you were not the person. So yeah, I think that like awareness and of people being like, I can't text Erica every day about this, but like I'll text Claire about it or whoever else or Thomas or whatever.
Yes.
Thank you so much to Nutrafol for sponsoring today's episode. I am at the place in my life, and I'm guessing that a lot of you are too, where I have friends who have all of the various things going on. I have friends who are pregnant. I have friends who are maybe possibly in or on the cusp of perimenopause. I have friends who are dealing with stress and anxiety that is like keeping them up at night. And the one thing that seems to be sort of a common thread through all of this is that we're all having problems with the hairs on our heads. The hairs on our heads are not what they once were, and we are like trying to solve for that, and that is where Nutrafol comes in. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Everyone's root causes for thinning hair are different, so a one-size-fits-all approach for hair growth doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas that are tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow throughout different stages, such as postpartum and menopause, as well as for different lifestyles, such as plant-based diets. Physician-formulated with drug-free ingredients, Nutrafol supplements support healthy hair growth from within by targeting root causes of thinning, including stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism, as they evolve throughout a woman's life. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. Take their hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes. With Nutrafol, building a healthy hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription required. Free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day. See results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code A Thing or Two. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code A Thing or Two. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code A Thing or Two.
I think that's a really good transition into this next bit, which is the ring theory of grief. So we've talked about this a couple of times on this podcast, I think most recently in 2020. And there's basically this LA Times story that we referenced called How Not to Say the Wrong Thing by Susan Silk and Barry Goldman. Do you want to explain it?
Sure. The basic idea is that there, if you... when something traumatic happens, there is often one or like multiple people at the center of the thing. And if you were to draw a diagram on a piece of paper and put those people at the center of the thing and then draw concentric circles and put the people who are, you know, sort of furthest removed at each furthest removed circle.
It's like the close friends, the neighbors, the coworkers, the whoever else, the Facebook friends. I don't know.
The idea is if you need to lean on somebody for something related to this trauma, you always lean out, right? You can put comfort in towards the center of the circle, but anything you need to look outwards for it. So if you need comfort, if you need information, if you need whatever it is.
If you need a conversation that's like, I just don't understand how this happened, you go out.
Yes.
For example.
Yes. So the example they use is that the person in the center of the ring can say anything she wants to anyone, anywhere. She can fetch and complain and whine and moan and curse the heavens and say life is unfair and why me? That's the one payoff for being in the center ring. Everyone else can say those things too, but only to people in larger rings. When you are talking to a person in a ring smaller than yours, someone closer to the center of crisis, the goal is to help. Or I'm adding here, just listen.
Yeah.
Which it's just such a simple, useful concept. And they say that in that one of the somebody who they taught this to found it useful to actually tape this to their refrigerator, which I'm like, yes, because in that moment, if you are experiencing crisis, trauma, whatever, sometimes you actually can't remember and you just need that very simple visual.
Like an actual visual reminder.
And it's, you know, the example, I think one example that they use here and that had been a real life example for you previously in a separate loss you experienced was a friend visiting a sick person and then saying to that sick person's husband, "That was so hard for me. I didn't expect that to be that hard. Like, I wasn't prepared for how hard that was going to be." And the husband being like,
Fuck you.
You think it was hard for you?
Right.
Like,
right.
No, you go and you say that to the a person further
to
removed
your best
from
friend
it.
Who might have some familiarity with these people.
Exactly. Yeah. Because yes, it is hard for you as someone in the
and it's appropriate for it to be hard for you. Yeah. It's just not appropriate for you to talk about it to
exactly.
that person.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, they call it the kvetching order.
Kvetching order.
So that is called the ring theory of grief. It is so incredibly useful.
So incredibly useful. The other term that I found to be useful during this time, I had learned from All There Is with Anderson Cooper, this podcast that we've also talked about before. He did an episode on anticipatory grief with the filmmaker Kirsten Johnson, who made the documentary Dick Johnson is Dead about her father when he was not in fact dead. And I think that I experienced that feeling a lot. As you mentioned, my dad had been in the hospital for a while. And I think that like, having language for it and knowing that this was what it was and being able to just like have the framework to understand it a little bit was really helpful for me.
What is anticipatory grief? It's the grieving that you do in anticipation of loss.
Yeah. And like basically that can sometimes be more intense because it's the unknown, right? It's that uncertainty and like that sense. Like sometimes when we have conversations and it's like, God, I just want to know. The like not knowing on
is
top
worse.
Of the like sadness and potential grief exacerbates things.
Well, you experience something that a lot of people go through, particularly in the loss of a parent or an older person in general, where there is some period in the hospital where it's unclear which way it's going to go. And the direction seems to be changing constantly. And you're also faced with some amount of control and also total loss of control, right?
Yes.
Like there are certain decisions that are hypothetically in your hands and all of these things. It is like wildly disorienting and you're forced to sort of move through all of the
and like live in the purgatory.
Yeah, exactly.
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and as a result, also sort of finding yourself craving an answer, even if it's the worst one.
I think that's right. Because it's an answer. Right. It's the like way that we deal so poorly with uncertainty.
Yeah.
And I think it's that uncertainty that the like anticipatory grief sort of like builds on too.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about the book Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. Reading this book twice made me feel so much more equipped and comfortable having certain conversations and making certain decisions. And like, I can't get into like the like specifics of it because it's too hard. But Atul Gawande is a surgeon and a writer and a MacArthur fellow. And I think, and like just like so human in his approach to living and dying. And this book is all about prioritizing well-being over survival in end-of-life medical care. It was really meaningful for me to have language and tools and to not be relying on a medical system that just has a whole lot of other things to think about and a whole lot of other things to worry about and are trying to like do the care.
Priorities are not your priorities.
Their priorities are not your priorities.
And that kind of has to be the case in the context of the system.
That's exactly right. There is a quote from another book of his called Complications, A Surgeon's Notes on an Imperfect Science, that I thought explained this like idea fairly well. We look for medicine to be an orderly field of knowledge and procedure, but it's not. It's an imperfect science, an enterprise of constantly changing knowledge, uncertain information, fallible individuals, and at the same time, lives on the line. There is science in what we do, yes, but also habit, intuition, and sometimes plain old guessing. The gap between what we know and what we aim for persists, and this gap complicates everything we do. The most essential bit of this book if you are not going to read it, but really just read it. Really, if you know any, if you know a person, if you know an older person, please read this book.
You know a person who might die.
If you know a person who might die
ever
in your life, read this book. The most essential bit is to ask the question of the people in your life, what makes life worth living? That is it. And I don't, and it, and like, there's so much emphasis on advanced directives and living wills and healthcare proxy and DNR, and like, which is like, I think, meaningful in the healthcare mm-hmm. system. Most people have a lot of trouble like executing on those things to begin mm-hmm. with, but also just to like thinking about them. Mm-hmm. And I think that like part of the value of the question, what makes life worth living, is that that's actually the point. That question is like actually the point, and less a question of will I be resuscitated mm-hmm. or will mm-hmm. I like, do I want to be hooked up to mm-hmm. these machines? And there's an example in the book about a woman who had this conversation with her father, who was an academic, who she thought that his intellectual passions were going to be the driving force mm-hmm. behind, you know, what made life worth living for him. And he, in fact, said that what made life worth living for him was being able to like watch a football game on TV mm. and eat ice cream. Mm. And so he went in for like a very serious surgery, and he was unconscious, and she had to, you know, decide. There was a complication that came mm. up, and she had to decide whether they were going to continue or like sort of back off. And she was able to ask the doctors, will he be able to do these things mm-hmm. if, you know, if this works? And they said yes. And she was like, proceed, mm-hmm. you know, and she had the framework mm-hmm. for which to make those decisions.
Yeah.
I think the most helpful thing in the hospital that doctors could do or say that felt very sort of in line with, I don't know, like the Atul Gawande, like sort of yeah. approach yeah. to medicine, was the doctors who said at various points, I'm worried about him. I think that like it conveyed so much. It was so human. It was like demedicalized, and it gave us so much more context than you were getting from most of the sort of information you're getting, which is, you know, tracking levels and seeing, you know, what's happening on a day-to-day basis. And I'm worried about him. I think like just help manage where everybody else in the room is emotionally and mentally. And I was very grateful for the doctors and staff who were able to like interact in that way and engage in that way.
A big takeaway for me, because your dad was in a hospital setting where, which like almost any hospital setting, where the doctors are in shifts and they're constantly changing, and therefore you're interacting with different doctors and getting different perspectives. And again, to sort of echo the Atul Gawande messaging around this, the realization that all of these doctors are different ages, different levels of experiences, to say nothing of what their like sort of intellectual or expertise level might be, the human perspective and human way of communicating about this thing is going to shift from person to person.
Yeah.
And like, again, they are all human. And so getting those different perspectives just felt really valuable and important.
I think that's right. And I think also being willing to, when you have access to someone who you think might be able to communicate mm-hmm. in a way that would like land for you or be able to convey information in a more like sort of emotional, like interpersonal level, mm-hmm. like taking advantage of that.
Yeah.
And not being afraid, I think, of the protocol of it. If it's like, oh, if this person, if, you know, yeah. is it, maybe it's someone who's just in the room for like a specific procedure, but mm-hmm. you get the sense that they have a better handle, or like that they have a handle on what's going on that could be helpful for you to understand.
Right.
And, you know, being willing to call a doctor who was maybe there 2 weeks ago for their perspective, mm-hmm. even if they're not following the case, being able to give yeah. that the information on where the case is, where that they can maybe like shed light if that was someone who you thought was a generally good communicator. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're so used to being, or I will speak for myself, that I'm so used to like the idea of a doctor giving me anything more than what they're absolutely required to feels so shocking. And I fall over myself to thank them. But there are a lot of them who genuinely care and who
yes.
are willing to
yes.
follow up and give
yes.
you their phone number and be available for that, because yes. they really care and want to.
Yes, I think that's it. Yeah, exactly it. you know, when people ask, like, what can they do? I think the, like, feedback I've been giving people, friends right now, is get your own personal shit in a place that is saving yourself and your family as many headaches as possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's, like, easier to do this kind of stuff when we're our ages, right?
Yeah.
And when things don't feel like, it doesn't feel like we're having end of life conversations. It's just like we're planning.
Yeah.
We're like making plans and we're mm-hmm. making sure things are in order. Another takeaway through this process that in like a lot of cases, it's a done is better than perfect mm-hmm. situation. Like, yes, is it better to get good guidance and do all the research and feel like you've done an A+ job in figuring out your will or figuring out, you know, whether you need a trust or like all of these pieces? Sure. Yes, mm-hmm. that's great. But if it's going to mean that it takes you 3 years to do the thing, mm-hmm. do the thing now in mm-hmm. the most baseline, basic way, mm-hmm. and then like upgrade it later.
Right.
Like start freemium, yeah. go to premium.
Have something.
You know, have something. Yeah. Sort of from easiest to hardest things to tackle. Make sure you have beneficiaries on your bank accounts and retirement accounts, which is extremely simple, like mm-hmm. a 5-minute project. Get life insurance. Filing a life insurance claim has been one of the few things that in this process that has been easier than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Policy Genius was recommended to me as like a search engine for mm-hmm. this stuff. And I have found the experience to be good. Establish a will and like probably a trust. There are like millions of lawyers who can do this. There's also like an online company called Trust and Will that mm-hmm. could be the like good starting point. Then make sure your parents or older relatives or anyone who you're sort of responsible to or for in that way do the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you where those things live in their homes, on their iPhones, mm-hmm. on their computers. There are like free will templates online if they don't have them. Again, like truly just like the bare minimum like has mm-hmm. to happen now. It's been very fascinating in the like technological landscape that we live in to also just be like navigating some of this of like the things on phones and like the mm-hmm. the two-factor authentication mm-hmm. and the all of mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. has been like a wild
mm-hmm.
ride. The like last thing that I did for myself that I didn't know how I was going to feel about it is that I took a big trip soon after.
That had been pre-planned
soon after. And we knew we were going to wait to do a memorial until later. And so I had the sort of like option to do that. And ultimately, it felt right. And it felt really good to be in a completely different time zone. And it felt really good to not be at a desk. My friend Nicole had texted me something while I was traveling that I think just really like nailed it for me. She said, I think it can be healing to be reminded how big the world is when life overwhelms. I think that applies to a lot of things, but mm-hmm. it did just feel like, yes, helpful to be like out in the world.
I think you know yourself really well. And obviously everybody's different. Some people just want to be surrounded by community or whatever.
For sure.
I was also didn't know how like I would feel from where I sat about you going. And when it actually came down to it, I was so glad that you had it and that you were going. It felt like exactly the right thing. And I, for many reasons, I think you might have also tried to work.
I think I would have, in part because I think, unfortunately, I'm someone who doesn't love sitting with their feelings and doesn't really know how to like.
I don't think it's unfortunate. Everybody has a different way of coping.
Yeah.
You know, and as you know, I was very like, you know, talk about bullying. I really tried to bully you out of working like as this was happening. And like, once again, like to get back to like the ring theory, I spoke to like a mutual friend of ours who was checking in on you and told her like, and she was really like helped give it perspective of just like everybody copes differently and like, this is like might actually be healthy for her right now.
Yeah.
And but when it, I mean, you know, the universe lined this up and that, you know, your dad went very shortly before this, gave you just enough time to do everything you had to do before leaving for this trip. And so it felt like the exact right time of like, okay, now the rubber has hit the road and you do have to stop. It forced you to stop. And I thought it was good in that way. And I also just, because again, you are someone who can't help but be responsive to everybody who checks in and write a thank you note to everybody who sends something. I thought it was like the universe really like served you in this way where I was like, you're not getting any flowers or gift baskets or anything that you have to field and respond to and figure out how to throw away the packaging. Like, cause it, you know, those things, I was like, this actually feels so right.
It was really nice actually for those things to not come immediately and to come a couple weeks later. Like, and I think I would have felt that way even if I hadn't been traveling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it, I think, has been really nice to have those conversations with friends or to have those like people dropping by tulips or like whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, now.
Yeah.
A bit removed from this than it would have been immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did a beautiful job talking about this, and I think it'll be really helpful to a lot of people. And I love you, and I'm proud of you, and impressed by you in all of the ways that you have handled this, but also just talking about it.
Thank you.
That's the show.
This has been a production of Dear Media, and we are so grateful to the talented team over there for helping us make this podcast happen, especially our wonderful producer, Olivia Mead. You can follow us on Instagram at athingortwohq. If you have ideas for the show or want to advertise, email podcast@athingortwohq.com. Find show notes and sign up for our newsletter at athingortwohq.com. And if you love our show, you'll also want to join our Geneva. Lots of good chatter happening there.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.